at the home of the truth. Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
Little under the weather today. I appreciate all the people who have called, all the guests who have helped take the pressure off my voice. John Wilner, Bay Area News Group. You can read his work at wilnerhotline.com. He is also the co-host of Canzano and Wilner, the podcast. All new episode out today on YouTube. John Wilner joining us. Wilner, I got to start with this one, okay? Commissioner of College Football, Stephen asked me last segment, should it be a former coach if you're appointing a commissioner? I say no. What do you say?
I don't think it can be. Thanks for having me. Hope your voice is okay. I don't think it could be a coach. It's got to be somebody who has a business background, administrative background, can play backroom politics, because a lot of that's what would go into the job. I don't think it's realistic, though, because the moment you appoint a commissioner, the SEC and the Big Ten automatically would lose their influence. Right now, they're running the sport. Why do they want somebody above them? They don't. So I don't think they would ever agree to it, even if it were Nick Saban, you know, and Saban certainly understands the off-the-field issues as well as many athletic directors and administrators, but even Nick Saban would not get the job. They don't want anybody telling them what to do.
Okay, so if the Big Ten and the SEC would be against it, how does the rest of college football sneak a commissioner to the front of the line?
I don't think they can, because the SEC and Big Ten, they're running it. And anything that everybody else tries to do, well, they would just respond with, well, then we're going to take our ball and go form a different league and sign different postseason contracts. They can kind of hold the CFP over everybody like a hammer, because if they don't get what they want, they form their own playoff. And so the rest of college football just kind of has to go along with it.
All right, so when the college football playoff revenue distributions came out a couple, I think it was a year and a half ago or so in the spring, you know, the Big Ten and the SEC got 58% of the pie, and everybody else is getting way less, 29% each. Why didn't everybody else band together at that point and try to say, no, we're not going to let you run away with the revenue. You need us to do this. Why didn't they play hardball, the Big 12, the ACC, and others?
Well, I think it was, do you call their bluff or not? Because the threat was, we will go form our own postseason, and we won't have trouble getting a TV network to, because remember, the current contract ends after next season. So starting with the 2026 season, there was no TV deal. The Big Ten and SEC could have just said, we're going to go play our own, you know, 18 playoff, and we'll get ESPN or Fox to show it. And the threat of doing that gave them the leverage to demand this unequal revenue sharing. And I would add, the formula they used to determine which conferences got what percentage was based on largely on the participation by conference for the first 10 years of the playoff. And the Big Ten was able to use two Washington appearances and one Oregon appearance as their own on their that was added to their list to help them get a higher percentage. So if there had been no, if the Pac-12 hadn't dissolved, or the Pac-10 as it was, you know, the Big Ten would not have gotten as much of a percentage, because they wouldn't have been able to claim the Oregon and Washington playoff bids.
Will the Pac-12 get to claim Boise State moving forward as they negotiate new deals, or no?
I don't. I think no, because they're going to just get what the Big Ten and the SEC, I would imagine it's going to be an automatic bid situation. So they're going to get money. You're going to get, you know, Big Ten's going to get four, SEC's going to get four, and the revenue will be distributed, you know, in the 58, 29, is it? And then, you know, a little bit for the group of five.
John Wilner with us, Bay Area News Group. Wilner, the college football playoff, did Did it work? Did it work for you?
Well, I think it worked except for the Hartsfield-Atlanta airport on Tuesday morning, right?
Amen. Amen.
Yeah, it worked. It worked because it created more access. Boise State would never have been in. ASU would never have been in. Obviously, SMU. And Ohio State and Notre Dame wouldn't have been in under a 14 version. Think about all the games that were played in October and November across all the conferences that meant something that would not otherwise have had playoff implications in a 14 model. So absolutely, I think it did. They got to improve it. It's hardly perfect. There's room for improvement. Some of the changes I think are easier than others. I think we both probably think they need to try to move it back up into January and maybe finish it on January 1st, but that's going to be really hard to do.
Yeah, all right, let's talk about moving the season. That seems like a no-brainer with the NFL eventually expanding. They're creeping into the college football season. College football's pushing up against the, you know, the championship games with their championship game. It's not a, if I'm college football, I want to run away from this. Do you move it up a week? What seems like a no-brainer?
If you move it up a week, you got to kind of move everything up, right? So you have to start the playoff earlier. Instead of the third weekend in December, you got to start it in the second. And you can't start it in the second weekend if you're playing the conference championship games the first weekend. You got to be able to give teams a little bit of a break. So they would then either have to get rid of the conference championship games or move the whole regular season up 1 week and start it in late August. I think that's the simplest solution. That gets the championship game. You could probably get it to like January 10th if you squeezed everything in by starting, August, say, 24th. But I don't know if they're going to do it because that potentially messes with training camp and the off-season schedules. Everything about college football is complicated.
Oregon and their national championship window, it's part of the podcast that you and I did, and you brought it up, and I think you make some great points about Oregon, but how narrow does the window for Oregon feel to you in this era?
Part of me feels like it's closed. Like, this was the year. They had the roster. Washington was reloading. USC not very good. Michigan not very good. They were the number one seed. But then I think, yeah, they're going to have other opportunities because Oregon is like a football machine and they're built for this era. But are they going to – the question to me is more, what's the window to win one while Phil Knight's still around, right? I don't know the answer to that, but I kind of feel like it's going to be harder the next few years than it was this year. And I still wonder what would have happened – you know, if the seeding had been different and if they had played a game or two before they had to face Ohio State, would it have been different? I don't know, but it's something I've thought about.
John Wilner with us, Bay Area News Group. Wilner, we get Ohio State winning it. Notre Dame's got, I think, 18 of 22 starters back. Penn State looks good. Who do you like in the way too early prediction to maybe play for the national championship next season?
I do like Penn State. I think that's a good call on your part. They are going to – Drew Aller's coming back. Their running backs are back. They're always good at the lines of scrimmage, even though they're losing Abdul Carter. I think Ohio State will be a big factor. I think Penn State will be a big factor. Ohio State has the best offensive and defensive players in the country coming back next year. Notre Dame's going to be good. You know, you kind of assume that Texas, Georgia, and one other, Alabama, somebody else in the SEC. So, I don't know. To me, it seems like it's the same, this kind of the same players. There's been a lot made about the sport becoming flat because the SEC has not had a team in either of the last two national championship games. But when it's Michigan and Ohio State and Notre Dame and Penn State and Texas, it's not flat. It's just like they've opened the doors to let a few more billionaires into the country club.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Does it, you know, does a school like Arizona State face, regressing? Is there another Arizona State out there in your mind that you see coming on?
The easy answer for me on that one is that Utah is the next Arizona State, right? Because Utah had such a bad year, and I think they can reload very quickly and be very competitive in the Big 12 next year. Illinois, I think, they won 10 games, kind of under the radar, won 10 games. Maybe watch out for them. But it's hard to do what Arizona State or what Indiana or what SMU did this year. Come out of nowhere with no pressure, have a great season, and then you come back the next year and there's tons of pressure. And everybody's got you circled on their calendar. And all your players who've come back are thinking not only about just the team, but they're thinking about their NIL and the NFL draft. The dynamics change completely when there's expectations. So I think it's going to be really hard for ASU to get back to the top of the Big 12. I do think Kenny Dillingham is going to do a great job over time, but it's harder to stay on top of the mountain than it is to get there, I think.
John Wilner, Bay Area News Group. I'm going to cut you loose. You got a kid getting to baseball practice. What's life as a baseball parent like?
Well, right now it's pretty regular because he's got these off-season workouts every day. So we're heading back. This will be our fourth trip this week. And then things will ease up once he starts practice next month.
But it's year-round. Baseball
activities don't stop for anybody.
Yeah, but this baseball thing's out of control. Like, youth baseball parents in my neighborhood tell me, man, just thank your stars that you don't have a baseball player in your household. It's year-round from the age of 10, 11, 12 on. Is he playing other sports?
Well, he does play other sports. It's not technically year-round. This is a voluntary thing. These workouts in the winter, and we signed him up for them because, as you know, he had surgery in the fall and missed the last 2 months of baseball. We signed him up for these winter workouts to help get him back into it, and also for his mental health too, to just be back with his team.
Do you think the voter who didn't vote for Ichiro, Baseball Writers Association, should that person be outed?
I'm counting on you. Do some reporting.
You know, it's going to be some old, stodgy, curmudgeon baseball writer who's been in there who says Babe Ruth wasn't unanimous, so Ichiro can't be unanimous. You know that's coming to that.
Yeah, the guy probably voted for Babe Ruth, too. You know?
Hey, man.
All right. I will count on you to get that info since you're a voter.
All right. February 5th will be the day that I uncover that. I thank you, Wilner. Appreciate you, man. There he goes, John Wilner. I am interested to see, because on February 4th, Baseball Writers Association will make the ballots public that writers wanted to be public. So you have to check the box saying, I'm okay with my vote being public. Now, I check that box because I think there's some public accountability. Like, some people are going to be mad at me that I didn't vote for their people. Like, the Carlos Beltran crowd is going to be mad at me. But I'm going to be like, he was a Hall of Really Good guy. Plus, he has that trash can sign stealing Astros thing in his legacy. So I'm not okay with that. Meanwhile, I voted for A-Rod, who admitted he took PEDs. So people are going to get on me for that, but I'm okay with that. That's part of being a voter. Craig in West Lynn has called in. I'm hearing, Craig, you want to talk about my mortality obsession. We got about a minute. Go ahead, Craig.
Oh, it's not, John, we all want you to live forever. It's not your mortality. You know, it's just chiming in on, I hope that somebody's preparing a eulogy for college football.
Ooh.
Because it doesn't see the college football is in its death throes, is just blind. It's at best, it's going to turn into like a G League for the NFL, a semi-pro type situation, loosely affiliated with the schools and localities and stadiums to play in. But what I really wanted to talk to you about, John, is the Ducks post-fill. You know, we're talking about mortality.
Not an easy topic to talk about, but
you look at the Blazers.
All right. I got a little bit to say about that because I got to go to break here. But Phil Knight has set Oregon up with, obviously funding that will go beyond his life. Oregon's going to be just fine. But coming up next, we'll talk about the college football playoff, whether it worked, and what I think about it.